Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. All right, guys. You know, today's episode is pretty special to me. I'm not going to lie. Like, this is officially my 50th episode that I've done. Technically, I've done 51 if you count my intro episode, but I do not count that as an official episode of my library that I've done. So this is my 50th episode, and I'm very happy, I'm very pumped, I'm very excited. Like, guys, I'm not gonna lie, I'm not just trying to toot my own horn. I'm pretty satisfied. I'm pretty happy with what I've been able to turn this podcast into. Like, I'm very happy with the reception that I've gotten from you guys, the audience. I'm happy with the messages that you guys send me. I'm happy. I'm just happy. I'm happy. I'm very, very thrilled that this podcast has become what it has. You know, whenever I first started this thing back in December of 2020, you know, I remember talking to my friends about it. I used to be so dead set against doing a podcast. I did not want to do a podcast. I didn't want to mess with it. Part of it was just because, you know, podcasting has become so oversaturated. There are so many podcasts out there. I mean, there, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a podcast for all the ways you can eat an avocado. But, you know, and hey, if that's your thing, if, you know, you want to talk about how you can cook an avocado or eat one or whatever, more power to you. I might give you a listen because I like avocados. But, you know, the market was just so oversaturated, and I was just like, man, I don't know. I don't know if I even want to mess with one. I originally wanted to do a YouTube. I wanted to, you know, it was going to do like maybe 15, 20 minute long episodes for certain things, talking about the kind of stuff that I talk about on here. I wanted to do other film reviews. I wanted to do film reactions, like one of the original things that I did, which I'm still throwing around to do one day. I just have to find the people that would be willing to do it with me, would be for me and my friends to find the most god-awful, horrible films that we possibly can. You know, like, that's just, they're so bad, they're funny. And watch them, and like, just video our reactions, the things that we say, and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, that was one of the original things that I wanted to do. But, guys, I'm not going to lie, I don't know the first thing about running a YouTube. And whenever I started looking into it, like, what do I do? How do I do it? And I started seeing the equipment that I would need to be able to do it good, you know, like on a decent, like professional type level, I would need to spend a pretty good amount of money on certain equipment. I'd have to be worried about camera angles. I'd have to be worried about starting to, you know, edit all kinds of things out. And, you know, did I want to have the camera on me, or did I want to have fan art, you know, on there where it would just be me talking, but people would just look at pictures of artwork and all of that kind of stuff? What art would I use? What would be the legal things that I could use if I wanted to do film reviews? How much of a film can I show? Can I show anything? Can I even have the audio of it on there? You know, it was just, it was very overwhelming for me. And I was just like, man, I'm not going to mess with it right now. And so I started, you know, just thinking more and more about the podcast. And finally, I was just like, you know, to heck with it. Let's just do it. I want to talk about this kind of stuff. I know I've got a voice for it. I know there's people out there that would like to listen to me talk about this kind of stuff. And I just want to get it out there. And so, you know, I started it. I chose kaiju as my genre for this podcast, but as I've mentioned in other episodes, I am not limited to just podcasts. I am not limited to just kaiju. I love a very wide variety of sci-fi, nerdy, geeky comic book type stuff. Like, a couple of episodes ago, I mentioned I'm a huge fan of Superman and DC Comics in general. I love Thor from Marvel Comics. I'm not too big on Marvel as a whole, but I've been a fan of Thor for most of my life. And part of the reason of that is because I'm a diehard fan of mythology. I love any type of mythology that there is that's out there. Norse, Greek, Roman, Egyptian, Chinese, Japanese, Hawaiian, you name it. I'm a fan of it. Like, I have two entire bookshelves dedicated to just different types of mythologies and religions worldwide that I have read and studied and everything. Like, I'm a big fan of mythology and religion. Like, I love studying it and looking at it. The Lord of the Rings, I'm a massive Lord of the Rings fan. Like, I'm just aliens, Alien and Predator, well, not necessarily just generic aliens, but the xenomorphs specifically. Masters of the Universe, I'm a big fan of lots of different things. I'm a stereotypical nerd, guys. And so I chose kaiju as the subject of this particular podcast, but whenever I finally get around to actually starting up the YouTube, I will absolutely talk about anything and everything that I feel like talking about on YouTube. And that is not going to make this podcast suffer. For those of you that enjoy listening to the podcast and you're not interested in watching a YouTube video of me talking about this kind of stuff, that's fine. I'm going to continue doing the podcast. I've got an announcement later on towards the end of the episode about something that I'm going to do with the YouTube later on. It's going to be like my first step that I'm going to take into the YouTube and all of that. So, guys, I'm blown away by the reception and the support that I've gotten. 50 episodes, they came very, very fast. I have shelled out an episode every week, sometimes twice a week, in very rare occurrences, three times a week. Like, I have busted my tail for this podcast, trying to pick what movie I want to do, watch the movie. While I'm watching the movie, I'm taking my notes and I'm doing research and then recording it. Like, I've busted my tail for this podcast and I've enjoyed every stinking minute of it. Like, there's not been a single time since December that has rolled around in my head of maybe I should stop this, or maybe I should quit, or maybe I should do this every other week instead of every week. Like, no, I'm not gonna do it. I love it. I'm very grounded in this by now. This has absolutely become just part of my weekly routine. Very happy, very, very excited. So, before I actually get to the actual episode that I'm gonna be talking about today, I've only done this once or twice in the past, but I'm going to I'm going to give some shout outs. I'm going to give some shout outs. I'm going to share some statistics of the podcast and everything. Just, because the audience, you guys like to hear about yourselves. You like to hear about, certain regions or certain areas, countries, states, and things like that, and all that kind of stuff. So, I've gotten a few messages from some of you guys saying, like, hey, I'm from here and I listen to your show all the time. I'm a big fan. Like, thank you for doing it. Like, I'm your biggest North Carolina fan, or something or like that. So I figured I'm gonna go on ahead and just do a few shout outs for certain regions and share some statistics of the show. As of today, I have broken 2,600 listens, like, overall. Thank you very much to anyone and everyone that has ever listened to the episode. For you guys that tune in every single week and just, listen from start to finish, thank you, thank you, thank you. To you guys that start it, you get tired of listening to me ramble and you only listen to about 5 or 10 minutes of it, you know what? Thank you too, because you're part of the statistic, whether you like it or not. if you listen to just like 10 seconds of one of my episodes, it gives me a listen. And so, whether you know it or not, you're helping me out. So thank you very much. My top episodes that I have, my most popular episodes, the number one episode, he's been number one for quite some time, and that is the very first Kaiju Spotlight that I ever did. It was my second episode that I ever did, and it was the Kaiju Spotlight on King Ghidorah. And that episode, it's a toss-up between that one and one of the other ones that I'm fixing to mention, which is my favorite episode that I've done. I thought I put a lot of work into that one. I thought I was very thorough with it, and I'm very, very pleased with how the King Ghidorah episode turned out. And it is my most listened to episode so far at 110 total listens. So for all you Ghidorah fans out there that have listened to that episode, if you've listened to it more than once or whatever, thank you for helping that episode get to be that high. My second most listened to episode is my official review for Godzilla vs. Kong that came out in 2021. It is currently at 105 listens. Now, it is, as of now, my only official review episode. I guess you could really call the Masters of the Universe Revelation episode that I did a review, but I talked about the concept and creation of it and everything in the Masters of the Universe episode. So it was not just a full-blown review. But the Godzilla vs. Kong review episode is currently my only actual full-fledged review episode that I have. I am planning on doing more of them. Some of them I've already done, full episodes on about how it was made, the production, and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't really share my personal opinion on the film or what I liked about certain characters and what I didn't like. So I'm definitely planning on going back and doing more review episodes in the future. And it may be on movies that I've already done an episode on, whatever. We'll cross that bridge whenever we get to it. The next one, my third most listened to episode, part of me didn't even really want to mention this one because it is just my intro episode. The intro that is titled Kaiju, A History of a Fan. It's only about 20 minutes long, and it's the very first thing I ever recorded, telling people what they can expect with the podcast and giving them just a very brief history of how I became a fan of the genre, way back to whenever I first watched the original King Kong in a hotel room. It is currently at 101 listens. So thank you to everybody who at least thought, let's give this intro a shot. Let's check him out and see if this is something that we want to listen to. I believe that most of the people that do listen to that episode go into my other episodes knowing what to expect, knowing a little bit about my personality and all of that kind of stuff. So if you've listened to that one, thank you. And as of last night, I now have a fourth episode that has joined the 100 Club, and it is the very first official episode that I ever did, and this is the one that is tied with Ghidorah as my personal favorite episode that I've ever done, that I'm most proud about. And it was the OGs of Kaiju Part 1 King Kong, which is on the original 1933 King Kong. It is at 100 flat listens. So, thank you guys for listening to the episodes. If you've recommended the show to anybody, thank you, thank you, thank you. I cannot thank you enough. Now, for some just very, very quick stats. The country that I got the most listens from, naturally, is my own United States of America. They account for 77% of my total listens. In the United States, Texas is my number one state. I have more listeners in Texas than any place else. They account for 17% of my U.S. listens. And the number one city in Texas is Mesquite, which they account for 28% of my total Texas listens. So, to my Texas listeners, my neighbor state, because I'm in Louisiana, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. Thank you to the people of Mesquite. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm not sure if I am, Thank you so much for always tuning in and listening. I very much appreciate it. The next country is Australia. They account for 6% of my total listens, and the number one area in Australia is South Australia, which accounts for 88% of the Australian listens. So thank you to my Australian listeners down under. You guys are awesome. Thank you. Next up is Canada. My country neighbors in the Great White North, 5% of my total listens are Canadian. The top area in Canada is Nova Scotia, which accounts for 57% of the Canadian listens. So thank you to my Canadian listeners. Next up is Brazil. They account for 3% of my total listens. And the top area there is Ceará, with 49% coming from Ceará with all Brazilian listeners. Thank you, Brazil. Next up is the Philippines. They account for 2% of my total listens, and the top region there is Calabarzon, and that's the only place that people listen to the show in the Philippines. So whoever you are in Calabarzon, thank you for possibly being, you know, the only three or four people in the Philippines that listen to my show. But thank you, thank you, thank you. And next up is the UK. They account for 1% of my total listens, and of that 1%, 100% of them are in England. So thank you to the United Kingdom for tuning in and listening. All the other countries, which there's about, I didn't really count them up, but if I had to take a guess, I'd say there's about 50 other countries that the show has been listened to. There's probably only one or two listeners in the entire country, so all of their statistics are labeled as less than 1%. But thank you so much. If you've ever listened to the show, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, I have one more shout out to make. I've been thinking about this one ever since I was told about it. It is very specific. It is to a young man who is by the name of AJ Decker. He is 9 years old, and he is a huge kaiju fan. He says he loves the show, always listens to it. He and his dad listen to the show whenever they're on their way to drop him off at school, and they catch the show and everything. So, AJ, thank you very much for being a fan. Your dad has sent me some pictures of some stuff you've created online, like on a video game or something like that. He's shown me some of your toys and some of the edits that you've made on your phone, you know, to make it look like Godzilla's dorsal fins are glowing and all of that kind of stuff. Thank you very much, AJ, for listening, for being a fan. You know, it's because of people like you that I'm able to continue doing this podcast. I hope you continue to enjoy it. And, you know, thank you. Thank you very much. And if any of you are TikTok fans, he goes by the name of Epic Dino Battle Boy on TikTok. So go give him a follow. And AJ, thank you again. Take care, buddy. So all of that is out of the way. That was probably the longest intro I have ever done at 18 minutes and 50 seconds. Now it's time to actually jump into the episode. If you have been following me on Facebook, you've already seen like some of the heavy marketing that I've done for this episode. I honestly can't remember if I even mentioned what this episode was going to be. I believe I did at the end of the Rurouni Kenshin episode, which, by the way, the Rurouni Kenshin episode is performing very, very well for a non-kaiju episode on a kaiju podcast. I'm very pleased with it, so thank you guys for listening to the Rurouni Kenshin episode. I very much appreciate it. It's one of my favorite franchises. I hope y'all enjoy it. And, you know, Kaiju Carnage Presents is here to stay. That was the second episode that I've done, and, you know, they've both performed very, very well. I'm very pleased. So thank you to all the guys that listened to the Kenshin episode. But I believe at the end of that episode, I announced what this one was going to be. But here it is. Episode number 50 of Kaiju Carnage will be on the novelization to the 1933 film King Kong. The novelization came out in 1932, about 2 months prior to the movie actually coming out. Now, with this episode, I chose this episode specifically to talk about the novel because I have some big announcements at the end of the episode. And also, you know, since King Kong is my favorite kaiju, my very first official episode was on King Kong. I wanted this landmark 50th episode to be on something King Kong related. And, you know, I've got something else planned for just a few months down the road in December, whenever I hit one full year of doing this podcast. It will also be King Kong related. Just going ahead and letting you guys know that. Pretty much for any type of landmark episode I'm going to do, you can pretty much bet your keister that I'm probably going to do a King Kong related something. Because, you know, he's my favorite. He's what got me into this genre. And, you know, I'm never going to get tired of dealing with King Kong. So, I chose this episode because I have those announcements at the end and for the landmark. And also, you know, I've talked about in past episodes, I just enjoy talking about novelizations to, you know, to movies and all of that. So, I'm very excited to get to all that. So, with all of that said, let's go on ahead and jump into the full episode after nearly 22 minutes of an intro of the King Kong novelization that came out in 1932. So, first of all, I'm not going to get into like the full-fledged inspiration and creation of King Kong and all of that, because that is literally an episode all by itself. If you want to listen to that, by all means, scroll all the way down to the bottom of my library and go to the OGs of Kaiju Part 1, King Kong, and you will be able to listen to an hour of me talking about how Marion C. Cooper came up with the concept of Kong and all that kind of stuff. And I very briefly mention the novelization in that episode. So I'm going to just not mention a whole lot of the concept and creation and all of that of the character in this episode, because I've already done it, basically. But after Cooper was well into, you know, he pretty much was coming up with, he hadn't even really come up with a story a whole lot, but he was getting everything lined out to begin making this movie. And he reached out to a man by the name of Edgar Wallace. Now, this was a very prolific, you know what? Let's just throw that word out. This was a very popular, there we go. That's a little bit more on my level. This was a very popular author of the time. He had a lot of real big name books and everything out. And the reason why Cooper reached out to Edgar Wallace to write the novelization, not only the novelization, but he also wanted him to write the screenplay for the movie, was because this was all a marketing tactic. What Cooper wanted to do was, whenever the movie was going to be coming out, he was going to have some fans that just wanted to watch the movie, because as I talked about in the original episode, that jungle films were on the rise. They were becoming popular, like jungle slash adventure films. And so were somewhat like monster films, but most of the time they just simply used dinosaurs whenever it would be like a jungle film or something like that. And so he knew he was going to have those fans that was going to come into that. But he also wanted to have fans that, you know, maybe didn't want to go watch too many movies or something like that, but they wanted to read books. So he reached out to Edgar Wallace and wanted him to write the screenplay and the novelization to the movie, and the novelization was going to come out first. And he was hoping for one of two things. One, he was hoping that whenever the movie would begin to be advertised, that he would advertise it as based on the novel by Edgar Wallace. And that would pull in the book fans to want to go watch the movie. The other thing he was kind of hoping for was, since the book was going to come out first, he was hoping that the book readers would go out and read the book, really enjoy it, and then say, man, I want to go see that on the big screen, and then they would also flock to go see the movie. So he was trying to get movie-going fans as well as book-reading fans, which, you know, a lot of times nowadays, there's a lot of people that read books and watch movies and get a crazy amount of enjoyment out of both. I'm one of them. I love reading books, and I love watching movies. But movies were, they were still kind of like on the rise back then in the 30s. And so you just had a whole lot of people that would basically be like, why, I don't want to go watch the moving picture, as they would call it. Like, I'll just sit here and read me my book, you know, or something like that. So he was trying to draw in both crowds to be able to get that in. Now, whenever he first talked to Edgar Wallace about it, and, you know, it was like, okay, I want you to write the screenplay. I want you to write the novelization. Obviously, he was going to be part of the script writing process, because Cooper had a whole slew of people that helped write the overall story. Like, I'm not trying to badmouth Cooper in the slightest. I'm just merely stating a fact. He came up with the original concept of Kong and the character of Kong. The overall story that we ended up getting was literally catching lightning in a bottle. Like, because this guy would write a script. And then after he would step away, someone else was put in their place. He would take these four things out and put these five things in. Then the next person that came would do the same thing. Let's take all this stuff out and add this in. Until, like, by the time you got to, like, the fifth writer that was on the movie, like, you know, there were so many other, there's so many different hands had been involved with it and all that kind of stuff. Again, I'm not trying to badmouth Cooper or the Cooper estate. It's just there were so many people that was involved with the creation of the story and the characters and all of that kind of stuff. This could hardly be considered 100% Cooper's creation. Kong is absolutely his creation. But the movie and the novel that we ended up getting, like, no. There was many, many, many different people involved with that. And many, many, many people deserve credit for it. And so Edgar Wallace was going to be part of the script writing process and everything, obviously, because he was going to be writing the screenplay. And Cooper promised him that he would give him some type of credit. Like, you know, in the movie. Like, obviously on posters and things like that, it would say based on the novel by Edgar Wallace, but he told Edgar Wallace that he would give him some type of credit in the opening credits of the movie or something like that. And so he agreed, and he began working on the novel January 1st, 1932. On January 5th, 1932, he completed his very first draft, and he titled it The Beast. And he turned it in to Cooper to see if Cooper would give his stamp of approval on it. Cooper did not. Cooper was a very particular man. He was a very picky man. He wanted things done his way. Whenever he had something in his brain, like, it needed to be a certain way. Like, just for example, with Willis O'Brien, who came up with the sculpt for the model that was used in the film for what King Kong would look like. Cooper had rejected O'Brien's, like, designs, like, three times before he finally settled on the version of King Kong that we actually got. And every time O'Brien would bring him something like, what do you think of this? And Cooper would be like, no, that is not what I want. And he would just say, go back to the drawing board. The very first model that O'Brien brought Cooper and said, here you go, here's your King Kong, Cooper literally responded to it by just laughing. Like, that's just the kind of guy that he was. If he had something in his head, he wanted it to match up with what was in his head, and he was not going to take any less. He was not going to budge. You have to give him some kind of respect in that regard for sticking to his guns on that kind of thing. There are many people out there that would find someone like that to be very difficult to work with. But at the same time, he's helming the project. He's the one that hired all of these people. If he wants it done 100% his way, hey, he's the one calling the shots. Let him have it. So he turns in the original draft for King Kong and called it the Beast. Gave it to Cooper. What do you think about this? Cooper said, don't really care for it. Go back to the drawing board. So he sends it back to him. And whenever Edgar Wallace started to just barely start doing his revisions and all of that, he sadly passed away. And so he really didn't contribute a whole lot to the overall story. And, you know, he passed away, but Cooper is absolutely a man of his word. And even though Edgar Wallace had not, like, anything from the final draft that we got in the movie had nothing to do with Edgar Wallace, Cooper promised him credit, and he gave him credit. And in the movie, he is credited as a producer for the film. So that was pretty good of Cooper to actually follow through with his promise of giving him credit, even though he had passed away. Because he could have just said, look, this guy didn't contribute nothing. He's dead. I don't have to give him credit. But he did. So more power to him on in that regard. Now, in the original script, screenplay, novelization, draft, whatever you want to call it, Wallace had come up with a few things that, you know, we could have ended up with a very different story with what he came up with. Some of the things that he came up with was the boat that they was going to have whenever they're going to the island and everything. It was going to be slap full of convicts. Yeah. Danby Denham. Does that sound familiar to you? Danby Denham. He was a big game hunter. That was Edgar Wallace's creation. The next person that stepped in and was working with Cooper on tweaking the story a little bit changed Danby Denham from a big game hunter to a filmmaker by the name of Carl Denham. Also, everyone knows who Anne is, Anne Darrow from King Kong. Her name originally was going to be Shirley. And there was a man by the name of John who was going to be Anne's lover. And he was also one of the convicts. That character ended up becoming Jack Driscoll. So there's some pretty big notable changes compared to what we actually got. Like, we could have gotten a much different story. One of the main things that Cooper wanted to throw out immediately that Wallace had come up with was Wallace had come up with some cute moments for Kong. I don't have any examples to give. I couldn't really find any. All I know is that he had come up with some cute moments. And the reason he did that is because he wanted the audience to become a little bit more sympathetic towards Kong, because he was going to die at the end, and he wanted to be a little bit more of a gut punch to the audience if they were more attached to the character. Cooper did not like this because in his mind, Kong was supposed to be like the biggest, baddest, strongest thing to ever walk the face of the planet. And as far as he was concerned, he's like, cute does not mix with Kong. And so he's like, no, we're not doing it. So all of that was omitted out. Cooper then reached out to a personal friend of his. His name was Delos W. Lovelace. And he asked him to write the novelization to the film after all of the script process and everything was done and they had the story. He just simply said, would you please write the novelization to the film? And Lovelace obliged, and he ended up being the author of the novelization. And then the movie came out, and, you know, everything was going hunky-dory. Now, for the next part of this episode, this is where a lot of legal battles began with Kong. I'm not going to talk about the novelization for just a moment, but I'm going to get back to it because the novelization pretty much comes back to either be a savior for some people or to haunt other people. Now, what happened was Cooper had firmly believed that he owned King Kong outright, like that he just flat out owned him. The reason he believed this was because he created the character in 1929. The film was not made or released, really, until 1933. And so, basically, in his mind, he was like, it doesn't matter who made this movie, I created the character before the movie was made, so therefore I own the character. He started to realize that maybe he was incorrect on this, because not long after King Kong was made and its sequel Son of Kong was made, he tried to do a Tarzan crossover, and he was hit with some lawsuits, because they were basically, RKO was basically telling him, you cannot use the King Kong character. We have the rights to him. And so some little legal squabbles started from that. Didn't really amount to anything. The Tarzan crossover ended up getting thrown out. Which, by the way, if you guys are unaware of it, the Cooper estate, as of, I think it was in 2017 or 2018, somewhere around there, has actually officially released an authorized book by the name of King Kong versus Tarzan. And I own the book. It's a very good book. So in at least that regard, the Cooper estate did follow through with what Marion C. Cooper actually wanted to do at some point in time, which was have a Tarzan crossover, and they've done that in the form of a book instead of a movie. Now, the next time Cooper found out that something was amiss, like something's going on with my character, was whenever he found out that RKO was shopping around with Toho in 1962 to do a crossover with Godzilla. Cooper was very adamant about trying to get that project shut down. He did not want it. He did not like it. He thought the movie was going to be more of like a circus show. Like, he was like, my character is not something just to be leased out to someone just, you know, on a whim, just to make any kind of movie that you want. So another legal battle began there. And he actually sued Toho, John Beck, who was the American that was helping helm the whole project with Toho and all of that kind of stuff, and with King Kong. And he also sued Universal because they were going to be distributing the film. And everything pretty much fell through. You know, he's really starting to get the idea that, like, I do not own this character. But he had been saying that he should own the character, that he had simply leased the character to RKO for two films. The original King Kong in 1933 and its sequel, Son of Kong, that came out in the same year. And he had been screaming that for years and years and years, and he claimed he had proof. So whenever the court said, show us your proof, he claimed that he had letters that was authorized with RKO and all of that, that had signatures on it or something like that. Somehow, they would have tied RKO to this knowledge that he had simply leased King Kong to them for the two films. However, Cooper had done some time during World War II, and whenever he came back from his war duties, a lot of the documents, and also just, you know, this is about in the 60s and all that kind of stuff, a lot of the key documents that he needed are just, they're lost. There's no telling where they are. They've probably been destroyed or they've been misplaced. You know, there's he could not find them. And so basically they were like, well, you're just out of luck, Mr. Cooper. So you do not own the character. Now, it finally came to a head in 1975, whenever Universal was going to battle with one Dino Laurentiis over the 1976 King Kong remake. Now, Dino had reached out to RKO and offered $200,000 for the film rights to do a remake. Universal threw their hat into the lot, basically saying, well, we had a verbal agreement with RKO that they were going to let us do the remake. So they're battling and battling and battling. And then enters one Colonel Richard Cooper. He is the son of Marion C. Cooper, and he is the current head of the Cooper estate. He throws his hat into the fray and was like, okay, we're all gonna go to battle over this to see what's gonna happen with this movie. And it went to court, and over all the big battles that happened and everything, and throwing this out and throwing that out, well, I should be able to do this, and my father only leased a character to you and all that kind of stuff. That's whenever the big oopsie-daisy was discovered. Possibly the biggest oopsie-daisy in the history of King Kong, one of the biggest oopsie-daisies in the history of film. Because while all of these legal battles have been going on over years and years and years, and fighting to try and who owns the movie rights, who owns the character rights, who owns this, who owns that. Well, I've got this document. Well, you've got that document. Well, ha ha ha, you can't make that movie. You know, while all of that kind of stuff was going on, there was a certain copyright that Cooper was the owner of at the time that he neglected to renew. And that copyright was to the 1932 novelization. I don't know, for those of you that don't know what happens whenever a copyright is not renewed by whoever owns said copyright, that item, book, movie, artwork, whatever it is, it falls into the public domain. And for those of you that do not know what the public domain is, that literally means that the public is free to use that work, book, movie, picture, whatever, in any way that they see fit. Basically, nobody owns it. So while the movie rights was one thing entirely, all of a sudden, the 1932 novelization, the story, the characters, all that kind of stuff, like the very basic story that is limited just to that novel, not the original things that was done in the movie that was different from the novel, because there are some differences. I'll get to that here in a moment. Anything that's in the novel is now in public domain. And, you know, that's just pretty much how it happened. And so the court pretty much, they saw that, and they pretty much distributed Kong's rights amongst some of the people. Like, you know, the Cooper estate was awarded some rights, some publishing rights and things like that. RKO had the rights to the original film and its sequel. Universal had some other copyrights that was given to them and all of that, but at the end of the day, the novelization was still in the public domain. There was nothing that could be done. Richard Cooper tried to say, no, you know, like, let's try to renew it. Let's try to, you know, make it to where, like, we own the copyright to the novelization, and the court would not budge. They simply said, you had your chance, you missed it. The novelization is now in the public domain. And anyone in the public domain can now, or anyone that can use the work that is limited simply to that book, may now have free rein to use the King Kong story. And that's pretty much what happened. And that's why, you know, ever since then, you know, there's been a few, like, there's been multiple rewrites, not rewrites, there's been multiple republishings of the book now, because it is in public domain. If you get online and just type up King Kong novelization, I'm not talking about the novelization to the 2005 film or the 1976 film, which is just the script of the movie that was put in book form. That's so stupid. I get, like, I'm not a fan of, like, why? Why? I don't get it. Like, here's the novelization to my movie, and then you look at the book, and it's just a script. Like, no, that's not a novelization. That's just a script in book form. Like, that just aggravates the fire out of me. So, no, I'm not talking about the 1976 script in book form. I'm not talking about the 2005 novelization that was done for Peter Jackson's King Kong film. If you get online and you just type in King Kong novelization, or if you type in King Kong 1933 novelizations, you will see an entire slew of different versions of this book. There are library editions. There are artwork editions. There are children's versions. There's, like, just, there's illustrated versions. There's so many, because ever once the book entered the public domain, any publishing company that wanted to just simply republish the book and distribute it out, they absolutely could. And that's what they did. And for years and years and years, that's just how it was. And then in 2005, the Cooper estate finally decided to take matters into their own hands, and they officially authorized and had published a full rewrite with added chapters and updated for the times and all of that kind of stuff. And it is titled Marion C. Cooper's King Kong. There are 5 additional chapters that are in it. And whenever they did that, it was so that they could start making their own little expanded universe that would go more in line with the original universe that Marion C. Cooper created. This is the timeline. Some of it's canon, some of it's not, but this is the timeline where, according to that particular rewrite of the novelization, you can also fit in the King Kong versus Tarzan. You can fit in Doc Savage on Skull Island. The numerous graphic novels that's been written since then. You know, there's a whole prequel, sequel series that was done called Kong King of Skull Island, or Kong of Skull Island, and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, they just went from there. And they're doing it because they did a full rewrite of the novel. They added some new stuff, some original material, and they copyrighted that version of the novel. And so that particular version belongs to them. But the 1932 original novelization is still in the public domain and is pretty much open for anybody to use. That is the reason why Kong Skull Island, the film that came out in 2017, that's why it was able to be made. One of the loopholes to them being able to do it was just to simply say, this movie is based on the 1932 novelization. We don't have to ask Universal for permission. We don't have to ask so-and-so for permission. We are making our movie based on a public domain work. And so that's what they did. There is a book by the name of Kong Reborn, and it is by Russell Blackford. I own this book. I have yet to read it. I'm very excited to actually get to it to read it, but I'll get to it eventually. It is a unofficial sequel to the original 1932 novelization. Like, on the back of the book, there's a disclaimer that says, we are not authorized by the Cooper estate, we are not affiliated with the Cooper estate, and all of that kind of stuff. You have to do that kind of thing now. If you're going to do a novel or a sequel or a prequel or anything like that and say that it is based on the 1932 Kong novelization, you have to put those disclaimers on there. and put on there that it is absolutely based on that novelization, because if you don't, boy, the legal ramifications are something else. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for that episode. And now it's time for my big announcements. It is not time for my big announcements. I forgot to talk about some of the key differences that are in the novel that are not found in the movie. Some of the biggest notable differences that there are is there is an entire spider pit scene. We see something very similar to this in the 2005 Peter Jackson remake, whenever they're down there, you know, fighting all the insects and all that kind of stuff and everything. So that scene is in the book, but not in the final movie. In the book, there's, you know, a pretty good chunk of the trip of them coming from Skull Island to New York, and there's a character by the name of Lumpy that is in the book, and he is completely cut. None of that is featured in the film. And Carl Denham, all throughout the book, he is not once mentioned as Carl Denham. He is just called either Denham or Mr. Denham. And, you know, so that's another change. And then possibly the biggest change that there is how Kong dies in the book. Spoiler alert, people. It's how Kong dies in the book versus how he dies in the movie. Now, everybody knows in the movie, we've all seen it 1,000 times, he's up there, he's fighting the airplanes, they just keep shooting him until finally he just succumbs to his wounds and falls off and plummets to his death. In the book, while he's battling the planes, there's a particular scene where the planes come around and shoot him square in the chest, and it does significant damage to his heart and lungs. Kong then begins to uncontrollably cough, like he's coughing up blood because of the damage that was done and everything. That is completely absent in the movie. And the biggest change that there is that whenever one plane goes to get close to him, Kong leaps to try and grab the plane. He misses the plane and he falls to his death. Whereas in the movie, he just simply succumbs to his wounds, like I said a little while ago, and like slips and falls from the building. In the novelization, he actually jumps off of the building to his death. And, you know, that's pretty much the major key differences from the novel to the movie. I will go ahead and tell you guys, like, I've read the novelization, and it is dated. It is very, very dated. Like, some of the language that they use is pretty far out there, and, you know, some of the science is pretty far out there, but, you know, I still recommend it. Go give it a read. It's not bad. I have 3 different editions to the book. I have an illustrated version. I have another hardcover, somewhat illustrated version coming in. And I have the full rewrite that was done that is titled Marion C. Cooper's King Kong that was authorized by the Cooper Estate. So with all of that said, now it's time for my big announcements. And pretty much here comes the main reason why I chose to do the 1932 novelization to King Kong as my big 50th episode. Now, I've talked about a bunch of times throughout this podcast that I'm a big nerdy guy. I like all kinds of different nerdy kinds of things and all that kind of stuff. But one thing that I am also, I don't talk about it a whole lot. I am a writer. I'm not going to lie, guys. If I was to add up like all of my the novels that I've began, the one novel that I have actually finished, and all of the short stories that I've done, I have hundreds of different things that I've written. I have a superhero genre that I've worked on. That's the actual complete novel that I've written. I finished that novel probably about 5 or 6 years ago, but I never submitted it to actually get published because, quite frankly, I was too chicken at the time. I was, I had finished it and I was like, man, here we go. I did my own little editing for it and all of that kind of stuff, but I never actually sent it off for review or anything like that because I was not mentally prepared to possibly deal with the negativity or the turnaways that I would definitely get, I just wasn't prepared for it. And so I've just never done it. And so it's in an old laptop. And guys, I'm not going to lie, as much as I hate to say what I'm about to say, that laptop may be kaput at this point in time. And so even if I wanted to try and publish that rascal today, I don't know if I'd be able to get it out of there. So that, I haven't thought about that in a long time. That kind of just bummed me out. But, anywho, so yeah, I have the superhero genre. I have a high fantasy, series that I've been writing. I've written a great deal of short stories concerning that. This is a story that I've been working on since I was in high school. And, you know, it's very heavily influenced by the Lord of the Rings, the film trilogy, not necessarily the other writings of Tolkien. It's more the film trilogy of the Lord of the Rings, and also the written works of R.A. Salvatore, or Salvatore. I believe the correct pronunciation is Salvatore, but he is the writer, the creator of the dark elf character Dritzt, and I own every book that Dritzt is in. He's one of my all-time favorite fictional characters. I've never gotten to meet Mr. Salvatore, but I have spoken with him, and that was something else for me, guys, to be able to talk to him. So the high fantasy series I've created is kind of a mix between inspiration of Salvatore's work and Tolkien's work that was brought to life by Peter Jackson with the film trilogy. Believe it or not, I have some kaiju stuff. It's post-apocalyptic, kind of very similar to Pacific Rim, but not, pretty much minus the Jaegers. But it's pretty much about kaiju that invade Earth. And turns out there are kaiju on Earth that pretty much rise up to the defense, not necessarily to the defense of Earth, but because they are animals, even though it is science fiction and kaiju, I try to make it somewhat based in realism. And quite frankly, they're just animals being territorial and seeing these other kaiju from other planets as a threat, and they try to fight them off and everything. So I have... That doesn't even begin to describe the different works that I've written and all of that kind of stuff. I have kaiju stuff. I have science fiction stuff. I have something that's very heavily influenced by Star Wars. I have some stuff that is very heavily based in Norse mythology. I had, back whenever I was in high school, I was working on a Norse mythology versus Greek mythology concept and all of that. Like, I just, I'm a writer. I'm a storyteller. I very much enjoy telling stories and making people excited and keeping people on the edge of their seats and all of that kind of stuff. I've always been one of those people that's been hesitant to pull the trigger to actually submit the doggone things to get them published. So many of them are finished. They're through. I've just never actually submitted them. And I'm hoping to change that. because, again, I chose the novelization as the subject of this episode for a reason. Couple of months ago, I began to talk to one of my friends. I came up with a sequel idea to the original King Kong, and I just barely talked about it. I'll give you some brief stuff about it just now, but, you know, obviously the story is still very much a work in progress. But the basic premise of it is that Carl returns to Skull Island to try and capture another Kong. And doesn't work out for him too well, and he goes missing. And basically, the bulk of the story is going to be years later. I have not decided if it's going to take place in the 40s or the 50s, but it's going to be his children return to Skull Island or go to Skull Island to try and find the whereabouts of their father and also to try and get vengeance on the area or the potential Kongs that could still be there for basically causing their father to become obsessed and to go back to Skull Island and abandon their family in hopes of, you know, just trying to capture another Kong or something like that. And that's the very basic premise. The very, very basic. That's just a skeleton that I can give you of what that's going to be about. But I have so many ideas in my mind for what I want to do with this story. And I'm not going to talk in depth with them right now, but I'm just letting you guys know I am very much working on a unofficial sequel to King Kong. It will be a direct sequel to the 1932 novelization. And speaking of the 1932 novelization, something else that I'm planning on doing to help lay the groundwork for this unofficial sequel that I'm going to be doing, I am also, just like the Cooper Estate had an author go back and do it for them, I am also planning on personally doing a full rewrite to the original 1932 novelization. I will add some chapters to help lay the groundwork down for the sequel that I'm going to be working on. And that's it. So I have not yet decided on, you know, what I'm going to call them. I'm probably going to use the podcast logo because I do want Kaiju Carnage to actually become, you know, somewhat of a pretty popular type brand and everything. You know, not something that you'll see in Walmart one day or something, but at least something that people will know about. So I haven't decided what I'm going to call the rewrite yet. I may call it Kaiju Carnage Presents 1932 King Kong, or, you know, the King Kong novelization, or, I don't know what I'm going to call it yet. Unfortunately, I can call the rewrite King Kong all I want to, but something I forgot to mention earlier in the episode, one of the major differences between the novel and the movie, and this is the reason why he is not called this in Skull Island or in Godzilla vs. Kong. Nowhere in the novelization is Kong actually referred to as King Kong. Yes, that is the title of the book. But since in the actual work he is not referred to as King Kong, King Kong can absolutely be copyrighted and has been copyrighted, and that is the reason why he is only referred to as Kong in Skull Island and in Godzilla vs. Kong. The book that I mentioned just a little while ago called Kong Reborn, that's why it's called Kong Reborn and not King Kong Reborn. Like, you know, even as far as the Cooper Estate is concerned, look at the graphic novels and the other books that they've done. They call it Kong of Skull Island or Kong King of Skull Island. They cannot refer to him as King Kong. Like, you just can't. So for the rewrite, I will absolutely call it, like, you know, something along the lines of Kaiju Carnage presents King Kong, the, you know, the novelization based, you know, from Lovelace from 1932, or, you know, something, whatever. I'll work all that out later on. I've been basically just trying to focus on the story for the sequel that I'm going to be doing, as well as the added chapters that I'm going to put in for the rewrite. But as far as the sequel that I'm going to be going on, I have no idea what I'm going to call it. You know, I don't know if to call it, like, you know, I can't call it like Kong of Skull Island, because that's that's currently copyrighted and trademarked and everything. But this is, it's going to be tricky. You know, I'm going to have to be on thin ice, making sure that I do not infringe upon any original stuff. For example, like, for the book, I can, you know, I will have to mention in the sequel or anything like that, that Kong leapt to his death in the book. If I say anything about Kong simply falling off of the building to his death, that is infringing upon the copyright of the original 1933 film, and I can be sued for that. So, you know, it's going to be thin ice, but it's a challenge. It's something that I believe I can do. I already very much love coming up with new stories and concepts and telling stories and all of that, and I cannot wait to do this with one of my all-time favorite iconic characters of all time in King Kong. Now, as far as getting this sucker published, I do not plan as of now to actually send it out to, you know, be published or anything like that. I'm debating on whether to do Kickstarter or to do Patreon. Believe it or not, I have an OnlyFans, because I thought about using OnlyFans for my writing for a time, but because of the stigma that OnlyFans has with it, you know, if anybody wants to do that kind of thing with OnlyFans, more power to them. I'm not judging you. I've got no problem with it whatsoever. It's just, you know, OnlyFans has pretty much become known as for one thing. And, you know, I just don't want to be like, oh yeah, go follow me on OnlyFans or something like that. Like, OnlyFans, like, huh? You know, I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Again, I'm not knocking anybody that uses OnlyFans for whatever content you decide to put out. But it just, at the time, I didn't think it was for me. I may revisit that one day in the future. But, you know, so I'm planning on pretty much having this thing be funded by my followers, if you guys wouldn't mind. I'm not going to lie, it's going to be a very limited production run. I've thought about for each one of them, I'm probably only going to do about 100 copies a piece. So if I decide to do, like, on Patreon or OnlyFans or something other like that, I know on Patreon, to get people to pledge, it'll basically, I have to give a reward of some kind. So whenever I go to find out, like, hey, how much is it going to cost to get one of these books published? If to get one book published, it's going to cost, you know, $10, then I'm going to ask people on Patreon to pledge $10. And the reward is going to, well, I may ask them to do like $13 or something like that to cover shipping and handling. But the reward is basically going to be, all right, guys, thanks for pledging your 10 or $13 or whatever. Once I get the book published, your reward is going to be a copy of the book. You know, that's basically what I'm going to do. Whatever someone will pledge, they're basically buying a book. And, you know, if somebody feels like donating a little bit more, like, no, you know, I'll donate $30. Okay, you just bought 3 books, you know, or something like that. You know, that's basically just how I'm going to helm it. I'll have a goal that I'm wanting to go to. I'm going to get all of that set up, and I will keep you guys posted and updated and everything. And, like, I'm very excited. I'm very pumped. I've been putting a lot of thought into it as to what I can do, what new kinds of creatures I can come up with, what kinds of monsters can be on Skull Island, how many other Kongs are there going to be? Are there going to be other creatures like Kong on the island? You know, you guys are just going to have to wait and see. And, you know, hopefully I'll get this done as soon as possible. And whenever I get everything set up on Patreon or Kickstarter or OnlyFans or whatever platform I decide to use, I will absolutely let you guys know. And we will go from there. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for the episode. This was a long one. You know, this is, I'm looking at the time right now. This is a contender to be possibly my longest episode that I've done. We'll see after I save it and everything. So that pretty much does it, guys. So one last announcement. Next week, a week from today, at the time of the release of this episode, I will be journeying to an area of kaiju film that I have not been to yet. And I know a lot of you have probably been very, very patiently waiting for me to actually get to this. I'm going to be tackling an era that I have not done before, and that is arguably the most popular and well-done era of Godzilla film. That is right. I am going to do the Heisei era of Godzilla films. Just one film for right now. And the film in question is The Return of Godzilla, that came out in 1984. Now, this is not to be confused with the Americanized version of the film that is simply titled Godzilla 1984, which is a direct sequel to the Americanized version of Gojira that came out in 1956. The version that I'm going to be doing is the direct sequel to the original Gojira that came out in 1954 that completely ignores all Showa-era Godzilla films with the exception of the original film. Can't wait to jump into this one. I'm very excited to finally get to the Heisei era. I'm not saying I'll stick with the Heisei era for a while. You know, I'm trying to spread out the good, popular films for you guys. I don't want to do all the really good ones all at one whack, and then all I'm left with is knockoff stuff like Ape versus Monster, you know, something like that. So I'm trying to spread them out a little bit. So I know a lot of you guys have been waiting. I've gotten lots of messages wondering whenever I'm going to get to the Heisei era. I've gotten messages wondering when I'm going to get to the Millennium series. And trust me, the Millennium series is coming eventually as well. That's one of my favorite eras for Godzilla films, and I'm definitely going to touch on them. So, all right, guys. You know, thank you once again for 50 episodes. I've been having a lot of fun. I'm nowhere near done. Like, you know, be on the lookout for the YouTube. Be on the lookout for updates on the full rewrite of the novelization, as well as the sequel to the novelization that I'm going to be working on. You know, just keep an eye out for everything. Thank you guys so much. Again, thank you, AJ, for being a very adamant listener. And, you know, we'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.